Hi, welcome to an episode of Django Chat, a podcast on the Django web framework. I'm Carlton Gibson, joined as ever by Will Benson. Hello, Will.
Hi, Carlton.
Hello, Will. And today we've got Sarah Abdarrahman with us. Thank you, Sarah, for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
No, we're really excited. I always think you've been around for a few years in the community, one of the sort of the newer people in the community. And so for me, I'm, you know, old man now with my walking stick. But tell us who you are. Tell us, you know, how did you find Django and how are we so blessed to have you?
Okay, this is a long story. I will try my
best. Yeah, no, they're the best ones. We like them.
I don't have the usual path. I started with marketing degrees. I was planning to do like international trade, which I didn't really like it at the end. But during my studies, I met a developer and we talked a lot since I really want to do marketing stuff. Yeah. And I found it really cool what he was doing. So he was explaining how it works, how we do so. And during my studies, I have a course to do when you have to build a website, but not really with code, and with some blogs with Dreamweaver. Back to time.
That's how I got started.
Yeah, same, Dreamweaver.
So I found it really cool. Even I didn't really work through the code, and I talked to my teacher and told me I should go this way and start to learn by my own. So when I finished my studies in marketing, I started to learn by my own with some resources on the internet. And the developer I met during my internship helped me to have some guidelines. And then I done a master in programming.
Okay, so that is a tip. Can I ask, what was it about international trade you didn't like?
It's like when you buy some stuff and you sell them to another country. And I wanted to do that. Like, I really like to chat with people in multiple languages. But yeah, when I discover what is really about, I didn't like it so much. So I changed my plan.
Right. Okay. The catalog didn't live up to, like, the reality didn't live up to the catalog.
Yes.
But programming, you've stuck with programming. So programming seems like it's the catalog has fit a little bit better, to use Carlton's analogy.
Yay. I started to learn with HTML and CSS. I've done like my CV in a website with free page. I was really glad. And after that, I started to do more dynamic stuff. And with school, I learned PHP. And so I started to do more things, which is more dynamic and looks more on the website you can see on the internet. And during my master, I was studying, like, I think we say, like, in block release training, like, we have week in the school and other weeks in the company.
Okay.
And I was learning Python with my mentor at the company. So I discovered Python like that. And I really like the language, so I started to learn a bit more on my free time.
That sounds like an awesome way to do it, because Will's always banging on about how computer science courses don't teach web programming, right?
Which is true.
But like, you get, and that way you get the best of both worlds. You get some actual real world, I'm building an application, I'm working with a company, I'm doing something that's on the ground, but you also get the kind of theoretical background, which is, you know, quite important and helpful.
Yes, I wanted to, because I started to learn by my own, and you always not have all the best practice, I would say. And I think it helped a lot also to have some theoretical, since you start with nothing. So that's also why I wanted to do some studies about.
Well, you have a master's, but I was going to say, Carlton and I don't have formal education in computer science, but I think there's something to starting to learn on your own and then adding the theoretical component, because if you just do computer science through school, then when you graduate, I think there is, it can be a little, there's a disconnect when it's like, no one's just going to tell you what to do next. It's really up to you. But when you start with that attitude of, I have to take ownership of learning and deciding what to do, that's really what keep going with it is like. You have, it's up to you.
Yes.
So that's not the worst mindset.
I think I would have done the same if I didn't learn by my own before, because when you learn by studies, it feels like really theoretical and you don't have the same feeling as you learn by your own, like building stuff and you see how it works and seeing it's actually showing on your page. So it's really a nice feeling. And I think this is something I really wanted to push more and learn more about. So,
yeah. I think especially if you're used to doing some other type of work, to then have programming where, especially with HTML, CSS to start, you can do the work and then see it, do it, see it. Like that feedback loop, many jobs don't have that.
Yes.
And so that feeling, you chase it more, you know, it comes harder to chase as you get older, but you still get it. It just maybe takes, I mean, Carlton, what, like a couple months instead of a couple minutes to...
Yeah, it depends. Well, maybe if you're test-driven development, of course, because you write your test and it fails and then you fix it and it passes, then you write another test.
No. Programmers get it all the time, but like so many, most jobs, you don't ever take a moment to be like, that's off the list.
Yeah, I thought you were making the other point, but yeah. No, that's true.
Well, we have a long list of things to discuss with you. Go ahead, Carlton.
Well, I was going to say, no, Sarah, you're like, so I got to know you by the Django community. You're a community machine. And you first popped up, like, you know, but you do everything. But you first popped up on my radar for joining the accessibility team. So can you tell us, I've got so many questions about accessibility. So let me just fire them off and then you take them in any order. How did you get involved in it? What's your background in accessibility? How did you come to think, I'm going to get involved helping Django there? And then, you know, what are your kind of tips for, you know, the people who aren't necessarily accessibility experts for getting into it? Because I think it's something that's really important, but there's a lack of, I think, how-tos. Like, you know, okay, you need, these are the checklists you need to follow. Or, you know, perhaps they're there, but we don't know about them. Or, I don't know.
Okay, so when I get to the Django accessibility, first of all, I wanted to do accessibility stuff thanks to a friend, which was a coworker before, and he had some disabilities to see some stuff, and he was he had on his Slack some shape to distinguish each element, and one day he asked me to do change a color on the pipeline, and I didn't get why as a first instance, and because when you have for example the red color for error and the green one for the success, he didn't really see the green one, and for him it was exactly the same, and it was horrible to see if it passed or failed. So I changed the color in blue for him to really see the differences, and I started to learn more accessibility by that, thanks to him. And I discovered so many stuff, and I wanted to learn more and help also other people like him. So this is my story with accessibility.
Okay, so I'm just going to go there, because I'm like, okay, so colors. How am I to know what are the right colors to use? How am I to, you know, how? Because, okay, this is something I care about. I have no idea what to do. What do I do?
So you have, for example, a website which is called... Who can I use? .com, and you have the ability to see many types of disabilities. And for example, you have a background color and a foreground color. You can choose whatever you want for the both colors, and you will see how it renders for each type, and so it will help you to choose the best color for example a website or like some text on the background. So this is a tool I use a lot. You also have some extension on navigators, which also help to change the color of the website. So, for example, you can enable a more high contrast level to see how it renders, if you can see everything with those colors. And also on DevTool, on each navigator, you also have the ability to see the level of the contrast, if it's enough or not. Most of the time, it's a grade from 0 to 1, if I'm not mistaken. And it will tell you if it's a low level or a enough level to that. So the most high level, it's 3A, and the really low, it's 1A.
So then how did you make the leap from having your eyes open to accessibility to then joining the Django team? What was that process?
It's a fun one. initially, I do open source by night, and the website was really annoying to me to see like the white background really flashy, especially when it's really, really late. So I started to make a dark mode and I thought it would be useful for everyone. So I was doing everything on the documentation, and Tom Kering started to review my work, and then I finished it at DjangoCon Europe on the sprints, and then they asked me if I want to join the team.
Well, and I believe, and the admin as well, right? Because that was one of the, I forget the timing. Was that a year ago, or when was that when you added the light and dark mode to the admin? Was that 2 years ago?
I think it's 2 years ago.
Oh God, that's how old I am.
Yeah, no, it's a while back now.
Yeah, Carlton and I are squinting. We're like, what is that feeling? Yeah,
but you, so you did the docs, and then you did the admin as a follow up in the following release, right? And I remember one of the big issues was, well, how can we enable configuration of this? So you had to introduce the switcher, and it had to be nice and lightweight, and kind of. All of these,
yes,
bits and bobs.
I discovered so much extension and package just to make the switch of that. So I think it was a need for the Django community. So I'm glad that I helped for that.
No, I mean, it's a super advance, isn't it? So one thing that you've talked about, a couple of tools there, and we talked about the dark mode there and the accessibility. One thing I think is in process now, perhaps you can speak to, is this plan to add accessibility guidelines to the developer documentation, so that there might be some guidance to which tools to use or to, you know, what to check for.
Yes, we are trying with the team to add some guidelines, because most of the time people would like to help, but they don't know how to do so. And we would like also to add more of this on the process of doing a PR, if it's also be, how to say that, like not too much work for the contributor, but also keep that in mind for someone who will use Django for his project. Yeah. So, yeah.
But the last few releases as well, there have been lots of fixes. The form rendering, for instance, one of the motivations for the changes of the templates, they used to use the paragraph tag as the default template for form elements, but that's not accessible to screen readers. So the move in, I think, between 4.1 and then 5.0 as the final switch is to make div templates the default template, because that's more accessible to someone with screen readers. You know, and numerous. Perhaps you could pick one or two that come to mind. I don't know if there's...
I think the thing many people used to not think about is HTML essentially is a semantic language, and this is really useful for screen readers, and most of the time this is something which is skipped, and this is really useful to have tags like, for example, section or headers to really get for the user, this is a new section, or this is a paragraph or something else, or a quote. And this is really important to use that in order to help people who use screen readers to really get the information, even it's not clear at the moment. And this is something we want to push through, and it will help many people for that.
And I know Thibaut did a talk at DjangoCon US, sort of highlighting the state of the admin in terms of some accessibility failures. So there's a long road of possible changes, right?
A lot. there is many things to do, and we really want to move the accessibility admin to make it more accessible. And I think there are many things to change. The HTML is something we can already start to change. There have been some improvements, like for example the landmarks, which mm-hmm. highlight the different section for the screen readers. You can move to, for example, to the header, and then to the main content more quickly. So there is a lot of things to do, and even for example, there is a PR at the moment about links. We really want to change that, but it makes a lot of things to think about behind, because there is a lot of links, and it will change also the aspect of the admin. So this is something also to care about. So a lot of things to work on.
So and when you say that, it's like, yeah, any change that goes into the admin that changes the look of it, or the layout of it, is always a bit like, are we just destroying it and moving things around? And because a lot of times we don't know. And I think the same problem has come up with DjangoProject.com website that you've been helping to maintain as well, is that a lot of times someone will make a suggested change. It's like, well, yeah, does this, we sometimes feel unsure as to whether it fits the existing style, and the existing style is a bit dated, but we can't just go in and slap some pink on, because that just isn't going to go. How do we, given the bandwidth we have, given the volunteer capacity we've got, how do we make progress, do you think?
I think it can be step by step. But there is a moment that we really need to think about the aspect of the admin and the layout, because as you said, the style is really dated, and there are things which is really hard to change. So I think there is a moment when we will have to break some stuff and make sure this is okay for everyone. And then we will be able to make more moves on the admin about that. I think so.
So at some stage we need a refresh project.
I would love to.
Well, we can just look to Python 2 and 3 transition, right? Just take a decade and make everyone happy. I'm kidding.
But yeah, sure. But I think, yes, this also might help to have more user of Django, because some people will say Django admin is a bit ugly. And I think this is something which also helped to have more Django users. And it's also cool to have a nice admin when you work on, even if it's not something which is designed for the end users, I would say, like the customers. But as a developer, it's really nice to have that, especially as we have a lot of projects at the moment who have like a fresh, nice admin and stuff like that. So to avoid to have Django too much outdated, I would say.
Well, I think that the two big things that people see when they first come to Django is they see the djangoproject.com, which is a little dated. And then everyone's always saying, yay, admin. And then the first time you see the admin, yeah, it is a little jarring because it hasn't really changed since the first round. And so from a marketing perspective, that's not the best look. I mean, we're used to it and we understand why, but...
So yeah, I have like in my previous company, we were saying like Django is really nice. You can do many things really quickly. And it's really cool. And when we present the admin, they were like a blank face. Like, okay, I'm not a big fan of the admin, but if it's work, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, it's just for the developers anyways, so they don't... Yeah. Are there any examples of frameworks that have an admin that is designed better, or is it? Because I don't know how many other web frameworks have an admin. Really, is there an easy comparison? Like we should be more like something else.
I'm not sure. I would say it's an easy comparison, but since I work on PHP, Laravel is really close to Django, and there is an extension you can add to have an admin because it's not by default, and it's really nice, and maybe it can be an inspiration, but as it's not built the same way, I'm not sure it's really helpful.
It's interesting to me. I mean, we had Laravel and PHP really seems to me anecdotally to be the place where we look for inspiration as opposed to Ruby on Rails. Like Ruby on Rails is still out there, but it's, I think not, I would feel comfortable saying the last 5 years, I hear a lot more about Laravel and as being used, and also in terms of like, that's something Django should look at in terms of where we want to go as opposed to Rails. So that's been interesting.
Yes. I don't know so much Ruby on Rails, so it's hard for me to be able to compare, but as PHP is really used in France, unfortunately.
Everywhere. It's used everywhere.
But yeah. But yes, I'm pretty sure we can do better for the admin for Django. Even we don't take inspiration of other frameworks. We may have how do we say that? Like, for example, when I had the dark mode on the DjangoProject.com, there were a lot of people beginning to come on the project asking many things. Like, I feel there was more attraction of people since there are some change related to the interface of the website. So I think if we change the admin, we might have also the same, but for the framework.
Yeah, I definitely. I feel like there's this feeling that nobody really knows who decides what happens in Django, especially the docs, but they're this sacred thing. And yeah, just to see any change, I agree completely. It's like, oh, I didn't know that was possible.
Let's right, Carlton? I mean, come on. Yeah, let's no, but no, the point is nobody decides. Like, it's
the, well, no, the, no, I know that's the progression. Sort of, you're like,
this weird thing is that no, who does decide? Well, nobody really, actually.
It's not like there's somebody saying yes or no and this and that. There's just not really. We just keep it moving.
Yeah. But it is, but I mean, having new people come in like yourself, Sarah, and do things and have ideas means that the old cruft like myself can just be like, you know, and some other people can just sort of, you know, be move away, right? It's not like we're just saying no all the time, but there's actually things being done, which I do think lends itself to like doing these things we know we need to do. It's just a question of who's going to do it, and it's challenging. But I mean, I would say, Carlton, as a former fellow for 5 years, I mean, Django is exceptional with not breaking things, but maybe that balance could be loosened a little bit. Or,
well, I think that we'll just stick to this admin example because I think it's a good one. I think we talked a few times, and there's been various conversations about whether DSF could fund some development projects. And I think something like a refresh of the admin is something which would, A, need a financial, you know, stump, because it's so much, it would be so much work. It's a big project. But it would also benefit, and it would be like something that we can clearly identify as yes. There's a few sort of vague ideas. Oh, maybe we could throw some money this way. Maybe we could throw some, but actually, no, let's refresh the admin. That would be a good concrete thing to raise some money around. You know, get a team on and do
this admin brought to you by Microsoft, right?
Well, I doubt we'd get to say that, but you know, maybe.
No, well, didn't they? I heard, you know, back in the day, they estimated it'd be $1 million to do anything to the admin. That story's in my head.
Well, okay, so that's to rewrite it. Okay, so if you wanted to take the whole admin and rewrite it with CRUD-based views and, you know, like totally redo the entire admin, there's probably $1 million worth of effort gone in. And Jacob,
but now we have Neapolitan. So, yeah,
no,
I think it was Jacob.
Yeah, I think Jacob did that. I honestly am really skeptical about a rewrite the admin totally project. But to redo the templates, redo, and then there's a layer slightly below the actual templates where you're generating the HTML. You know what Django's like with its forms and its, you know, its fields and its this, that, and the other. Well, those would need some adjustment as well for a new templates layer. But that wouldn't involve rewriting all the views, rewriting all the URLs, rewriting, you know, which, oh, that would be a project as well. So, but like we, you know, getting some good front end chops on, no, let's redo the front end. That I think would be feasible. The DSF could get behind that. We as a community could get behind that. And yeah, the release, when it was released, there would be a breaking change. There's a new admin theme. So there'd have to be, you know, some migration path maybe, but maybe not. Maybe it's there's a new admin theme and you have to go with it. You know, because maintaining backwards compatibility always means we can't ever move forwards. I don't know.
If it's a neat template, maybe it would be fine. Finger crossed.
But there's my wonder, is it only templates? I don't know. If it were only templates, then sure, we could just ship two.
I know there is some stuff, it's really related to templates, but I'm not sure it's only that. And I'm not so confident on this part to tell more, but I'm eager to learn more. So I think it's a good one for me.
Sarah, we just sort of like, it was a natural progression that you were interested in accessibility and then you just did stuff and then it got accepted. But many people don't make those steps, and you've been helping the community in a bunch of ways to help others contribute to Django. Maybe we could talk about some of those. So Django Spaces, Django Girls, organizing DjangoCon Europe, Django Discord. I just gave you four separate paths. So you choose any of those four that you want to talk about to start.
Right now, I'm realizing I'm doing a lot.
Well, you got to take care of yourself too. Carlton and I can attest. I mean, I've said this before, but the talk where I first saw Carlton was a talk he gave in 2017 about being a developer for the long haul. And he talked about these things, and every year it just is more and more relevant. So I recommend that talk if you haven't seen it.
I will watch it. But I'm trying to care about myself. what topic should I pick then?
Well, I'll give it to you. How about Django Not Space? Because this is a newer one. that you're very involved with that is help having mentors and mentees and giving some guidance for people who want to contribute to Django? How did that come about, and where is it at now with the second cohort, right?
Yes. I've done a talk about that in PyLadies.com if you want to watch more. But it was usually to help people to contribute. I've done this on my own. I ask a lot of questions to many people, but it's not easy for everyone to do so. So I wanted to help for that. When Dawn and Rachel told me about this project, I told him, yes, I really want to help for that. And we started to build the program. And I also asked Tim to join, and Sarah also joined thanks to me, because I was talking on Discord like, hey, you should come. I think it would be nice to have you.
I'm giving out the candy.
So yeah, and we started to build the program just like that, and we have done a pilot which was a really really successful, and the next cohort is in January, so we have made some changes, but we have more people. We have like 80 Djangonauts, and we have also, if I'm not wrong, 6 navigator, as we say, mentors, because we love space, and I think it will be a good cohort. So we will see how it goes really in January, as we have a lot of more people involved. But I think it will be a really good cohort, this one.
Six groups of 3 each plus a navigator each, that sounds like.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yes, yeah. It is.
And this is so great that you just, I mean, you did check with the DSF, but you just kind of did it. Because that's always the problem, is that people think they need permission. But as we said, there's not necessarily someone in charge of everything. And so you all just did it and then said, hey, we did this thing. Can the DSF support? Which is, for so many, in so many areas, absolutely the way to go, to not wait on the board, the DSF board, or someone else to give permission, but just to do it and show that it works. So that it's so good to see, especially having been on the board. It's so good to see. It makes it so much easier. It's just like, this is a real thing. It's happening. Do you want to support? Oh, it's part of the Django community? Of course. Right? Instead of theoreticals, it's like, nope, it's a real thing. So I wish this approach could be applied to so many other things. But of course, it's a huge amount of time and effort for you and the other organizers. So that's the bit that we had Lily Foot on recently. And I believe she's doing it again, or she was open to doing it again, but was talking about the sustainability part, right? We can't expect the same people to do the heavy lifting all the time. So
yes, and related to her, since we have enough navigators, we just ask her if she wants to be a backup navigator, so she has time for her, and just in case for replacement. So we keep the fact we're trying to care of people, and if you want to step back, you can.
And if people, like, you know, people in the community want to get involved, I mean, could they join the Discord, or could they, could they offer advice? Could they be around to help with PRs? What's the best way to contribute if you're not, you know, if you're not an official navigator or an official mentee for this program?
Good question. We do have presentation, and we want to implement also office hour to have people who would like to talk or do pair programming or discover something new. And this is a way to do so. If you would like to ask for that and help, you can reach out to us in social media or in contact at django.space. And also me, if there is any question, I'm open to it. And so this is one way. And we also care about suggestions. So if you have any suggestion or something you would like to implement, or you have an idea and you would like to know if it's something possible for Django.Net Space, we are really happy to hear about that.
Okay, because the part of the Django.Net Space Discord is kind of a safe space, right, as well for contributors, because one of the big problems is the, you know, perhaps the Django forum is a bit, you know, thin air. It might be a bit scary. Or
yeah, we are trying to keep a small space to allow people to ask questions, to feel not the fear of asking a supposed to be naive question, which is really not the case in front of a lot of people. So this is something we would like to keep in Django.Net Space, but we are happy to have some intervention of people, even if it's occasional.
Okay, brilliant.
Well, can we talk about your day job? I know that you, when you're not doing all these things, you've been at Octopus Energy for a little while, like, and I think you're primarily focused on back end. We've been talking a lot about more front end things.
Yes.
Is that correct?
This is correct. I'm working at Octopus Energy France, which is part of Octopus Energy Group. And I'm doing backend stuff at the company, and I'm working on the tool which help operational people to create a contract for customers who want renewable energy, and a lot of more tools, because we do care of green energy and renewable energy. So this is a part of my daily job.
Now, is that what I know for some listeners who are newer in their career, when they hear back end, it's like a black hole. Like they're thinking, like, is that models? Is that views? Is that URLs? Are there any, like, how does that work? Does a manager come to you and say, we want this functionality and here's the code base, go? Or like, what are some examples of, you know, because I know it's so different on a huge code base like Octopus must be, as opposed to a smaller project implementing things. Like what, so I guess what would be, is there an example of a specific task that being a backend developer would entail for you? Does that make sense? I don't think I worded that very well.
I think I get it. I will try to answer. You will tell me if it's answering to your question. For example, I can have a task to implement some reminders for the operational team to make sure to see when there is someone who needs to have a reminder that she needs to consume less energy at this time of the period, for example. I'm able to implement this part, for example. This is a really fake example, but just to see how it works. This can be something like that. As we are an international group, I can work, for example, on something part of another country. For example, if we have a new team in Portugal, we will have to implement everything. So I will help them to implement all the platform, all the stuff which are needed to make sure the product is available for the customers. They can follow their consumption and all the stuff like that.
And can I ask, how is Octopus to work for? Because it seems like a lot of people are working there now.
Almost everybody.
Constantly hiring at all the conferences with the, you know, come and talk to us. So it's big, no? It's active.
Yes. I think we are around 200 developers around the world, if I'm not mistaken. And the thing I really like in this company is even if we are splitted all around the world, we are still really friendly, trying to help each other and really being like a team. We want to help other people to grow. And even if it's a big group, we are still having this as you can have in a small team, for example. And for sure, Octopus, it's really nice.
Well, I remember at one of the Django cons, they had the small little octopus plushies, and I brought one. That's like the number one thing I've ever brought home to my kids. They still have one. I only brought one, but that's a nice swag.
You only bought one. No, that's such an error. You need one each child. That's the rules.
Yeah, but it's not special. It's not special if I bring it for all of them. Carl.
If you don't make them fly over it, yeah.
Yeah, just throw it in the middle of the room and say, "Here, go."
Hopefully, anyways, I will come in DjangoCon US and I will bring you the new one we have with the dark eyes.
Ooh. Oh no! Yes, that is. She's showing it. Yeah. Ooh.
So you also organized Django meetup in Paris. Is that Django or Python?
Django.
Okay.
We do have a Python here, which is organized by other people. So I'm only organizing the Django one. We had three sessions since the first one I did. And it's happening each 3 months, approximately. We can go.
Well, I was just going to ask because Django is quite small, really, in the big scheme of things, and so a monthly meetup would seem a bit much, maybe. But you said every 3 months.
Yes, I don't have like. I don't know all the people around the Django community in France, so it's hard to have speaker each month, maybe later, but right now it's not so easy. And so that's why I also organize that only each 3 months. And maybe later we will have more speakers willing to speak at the meetup, but that's also why we don't have so much.
But people in the French Django community should get in touch to help you organize it as well, right? Because
yes.
You can't be doing this just by yourself.
It's a lot of work.
No, it's fantastic to have one. There was here in Boston, there was one that was monthly for a number of years, and then COVID hit, and there were two organizers who did most of the work, and you know, one moved away. And I do think it doesn't need to be monthly, as Carlton was saying. Like, just having one is such a benefit because I've met so, yeah, it's such a resource, but it is so much work, right? Like, often, at least here in Boston, I've found there'll be one company that will be willing to host on a somewhat regular basis, and then maybe another company that donates pizza or something. But it's, yeah, it's a lot of work to do, but it's a huge benefit to the community for sure.
Yes, I started that after the COVID. I've been one in the COVID, which was Django London. And someone asked me, why are you there? You're not even in the UK. and I told him there are no Django meetup at the moment in Paris. So this is also why I created this one. But I think despite all the work we had for organizing it, I really liked to see all the people during the meetup and networking, seeing each other. And there is also some friends who come and seeing each other for a long time, like, hey, how you been? It's been a while. It's really nice to see you. So this is something which really helps also to organize those events when you see all the people gathering at the same time in one place.
But well, since before COVID, I've been threatening to get the train to Paris, and it's still on my list of things I really want to do, but haven't actually done. But when I do, can I come to your meetup?
You should. You can.
Yeah, when you're touring colleges, Carlton. You
yeah,
can,
yeah. What for the well, for Galen?
Yeah,
for myself.
Well, there's, you know, one issue we have is in Django is just having people find out about things. Like in the docs, we do have a link to a local Django community section, which is empty at the moment. But that's something that I'm curious what your thoughts are, Sarah. Like, do you find I find that people just don't know about things because we Django don't have an email service, or maybe the website doesn't have people to put the time into marketing, but we could do a better job of telling people about all the things that are happening. So I guess my question to you would be like, how do people find the Django Paris meetup? Were you able to email people? Like, is it just like word of mouth, or how do you let people know that, you know, 'cause Paris is a big city, right? But how do you get in touch with everyone?
Yes. Before COVID, there was a Django Meetup Paris. I was part of, but I think it just died with COVID. And I just trying to put some messages on the group, even I'm not the organizer, to say, hey, I'm trying to do something.
Oh, okay.
So I know there are people who watch there. Also on the meetup.com website, some people are searching on this platform. But I agree with you, since we don't have enough, I think, communication and marketing about that. Like, I try to, for Django Meetup Paris, to put the event on a local association, which is part of it's the Python French Association, to let people know that I'm organizing a Django event. So I'm trying to put the event where there is some place related to Django or Python, but it's hard to reach out to people when you are not sure where they see the event and where's the best way to reach them.
I mean, I think it's still up, the Django People website, for a while, that connected people. I almost wonder if
Django People had to be taken down eventually. There was an unfixed security issue, and it had been left and it had been idled and it was getting spam, and in the end that had to be shut down. But we need something like that.
Well, I was thinking, because, you know, email is expensive to do, but if there was, you know, if it's just a database, we could have millions of rows where it's literally just like, what's your name? Where are you located? Are you, you know, email address, if you're open, so that when someone says, I want to open Django Paris, I want to open Django Marseille, we can say, here's all the emails we have from people in that area. And it could be something that, you know, I don't know, the Django developers survey, or I'm trying to think of a resource that the DSF could manage in a non-expensive way, so that there is this pool of people. Cause we know millions of people are using Django, and then some percentage would be open to contact. I mean, for example, the Django News newsletter is one tool, but it's in English and it's every week. And, you know, it has almost 4,000 people, but that's a drop in the bucket. Whereas I'm sure there's, I don't know if it's 4 million, but there's a lot more people who maybe would want to hear occasionally from Django in quotes itself about the stuff. I don't know. It's not a new idea, but I wonder if, you know, if we put a back end, if there's a way to ask people to voluntarily submit information, then they can be somehow organizers in their area can contact them. I don't know.
Yeah, I know that in DjangoCon Europe last year, there was a work about gathering all the meetup related to Django to put that on the website, DjangoProject.com. And I hope at some point in the community local page there is there will be the list of everything. But yes, that I think right now the best place to ask for things and events is Discord to me. But maybe there are other places which will work. But I'm not sure. Everyone is aware about that.
Yeah, no, that's the problem, is the fragmentation of it. Like, there's some on the forum, there's some on the Discord, some I don't know where. It's difficult.
We've just been asking you questions the whole time. Is there anything you wanted to discuss while you're here? Any questions for us?
I don't have at the moment.
I know it's hard when we've just been lobbing questions at you all day long. But, well, I'll give you, you've sort of answered it, but one question we like to ask recently is, so if you have a magic wand, I'd say separate from accessibility, what is something you'd like to change in Django? So you just make it so. Is there something that jumps to mind that you would like to change or improve with Django itself?
That's a tough question.
Well, Carlton, we didn't get a chance to put this on air, but you've been doing some work on authentication. Like, I think this is worth a 2-minute, like, give your take on.
Okay, so I think that we've gone a bit wrong with the custom user models. I think it's kind of like a tar pit for users. I think the vast majority of users don't need to customize the central auth model ever. What they need is a profile model. And they need to have that separate from their central auth model, because your central auth model is fetched from the database on every single request. Right? And so if you've got like my bio and my this and my that and my that, you end up with 50 fields being fetched from the database every single request. And it's like, no, that's not what the central auth model is about. The central auth model is about identifying the user for this request. And that's something which I think Django should have just kept secret. I understand why historically it didn't. So the thing that I would fix in Django, if I had a magic wand, was to make the email field unique on Django Contrib models user, so that people can do login with email, which was all they ever really wanted. And then perhaps drop the first name, last name fields, and move those to a profile model, and then separate the auth from the profile. And so Django would keep auth, which it really is a difficult topic, and it really is one you don't want to get wrong, and it really is a battery that Django should provide. Keep that in Django, and then give us, you know, a clear pattern for, you know, if you need profile data, this is how you do it. That's what I think I would fix if I had a magic wand.
I agree.
Thanks for knocking that one up for me, Will.
Well, no, we haven't had that on air before. But anyways, you know, it's a big question, Sarah, so it's okay if you can't think of one, but that's one that Carlton in particular is...
It's been bugging me for years, because I've worked on projects where it's like literally the custom auth model is just a dumping ground for miscellaneous junk. And it's like, why is my request like, well, you see what your auth model's doing and every single request in the middleware there, right? Anyway.
Yeah. I'll take a stab. I haven't done this in a while. I think for me... I mean, you know, this is not a new idea, but like the serialization API story, you know, there's really interesting things happening with Django Ninja. DRF is largely feature complete. There's some things we Django could improve. Carlton has some specific ideas, but the fact that that is not baked into Django itself, and I know we want to keep Django core small, but it really feels like APIs should be within core in some way. So that would be my quick take.
So just on that, David Smith has picked up the content parsing work. We should be able to handle when that's complete, however long that takes. But we should be able to handle JSON requests with the request object without having to need extras, and that would be nice. And then exactly what we do about, you know, the equivalent of serializers or DRFs, generic views. Well, that's an interesting question to resolve over the next few years. Come on, Sarah, there must be one thing that when you're sat there and you're busy banging away at your computer and you're like, this is really annoying. Why do I have to do this every time? Come on, what's that thing? What's that itch?
I think what you said with the odds is something I've done a lot. So, yes, I agree too. But I don't have anything in mind.
Okay.
Well, let me ask you, because we've talked about front end. Have you had a chance to play with HTMX? Do you have any thoughts on that?
No.
No.
I didn't have time. I just watched the documentation and have done as many people like, oh, I really need to try out. And I didn't have time. But I know some friends who use it also in France. They replace everything in front end to, like, for example, they had React and they changed to HTMX. And they seems really happy with that. So seems to be really promising. So hopefully I will have some time to try.
Yeah, I think it was this year or last year, there was a DjangoCon talk about exactly that, about swapping out most of React for HTMX. Well, anyways, yeah, lots going on, and you know, we didn't really talk about Django Girls, Sarah, or organizing DjangoCon Europe, but Carlton and I both had a chance to see you there, as well as the other organizers, and that was really a great conference. I mean, I loved being in Edinburgh and my first DjangoCon Europe. I finally got to meet all these people I'd only known about online. So thank you for your work on that.
Yes, I'm really happy. And I was happy also to see you for the first time at DjangoCon Europe. So it's really nice to see everyone you have talked to online in real life.
Yeah. And we, you know, we've said this before, but we need Django. We needs this. Like there's so much work that is done, and you know, once twice a year to actually just see a person face to face. You know, I always come away with more energy from the conference. Carlton, wrap us up here. I'm just babbling.
Well, I was just gonna say anything you want to shout out before we call it quits, Sarah, or you. Maybe no, it might, but if there is, there's a chance.
There is something, as you know, I'm really a big fan of accessibility. If you have any concern or any question about accessibility, we have now a new category in Django Forum for accessibility. So if there is anything you want to ask or talk about, you can go to the forum and we will be happy to answer. And I'm trying to write an accessibility checklist from my point of view, and hopefully I will be able to share it soon-ish. So this is something which could help people who are not aware of everything to be able to do some checks on accessibility from their own.
That's great. I'm such a huge fan of checklists. I think checklists to rule them all. So, all right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to come on. Really appreciate it and all the work you've been doing. It's truly like gives me inspiration. Like I get excited. It's just seeing, you know, the Saracon conference that we should have you and Sarah Boyce yeah. and many others who just come in like a breath of fresh air and just do stuff and just, it's, I can't tell you how refreshing it is to see that, because during COVID, sometimes it felt like we were hanging on a little tight, but now I feel a lot more relieved. So thank you for all of that.
Yes. Thanks for coming on, Sarah. Right. Let's call it quits. With Django Chat, join us next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.